Welcome to the Making a Runner podcast. I'm your host, Nick, a running specialist, biokineticist, and coach.
And I'm a co-host, Davey, aka Davey on the Run.
Through our shared knowledge and experience, we unpack the fascinating topic of running.
We speak to coaches, athletes, subject matter experts, and everyday enthusiasts to help you improve your running.
And ensure that you enjoy every step of the way, wherever the road or trail may take you.
This is how runners are made.
It's how runners are made, baby.
Oh yeah.
The more people can understand that we are effectively hormone puppets as humans, our lives are being played out by a myriad of hormones that are having effects on a variety of our cells. Yeah, exactly right. And that's termed the exercise paradox, is that those that are most likely to benefit from exercise, they also those that are most likely to actually suffer complications from the exercise. It takes a while. If you're new to sport and new to running and to exercise, you really got to let your body adapt.
That's also happening when you're not running because you're injured.
Exactly. And so then you end up trying to find your fix in some other way. And so there's no gentle way to say that exercise is a type of drug.
Yeah.
It's just that it's a healthy drug 99.9% of the time. And we're so thankful for it. A lot of the world would be being a lot crazier if we didn't have it. Yeah, so don't rely on what the scale's saying to you. Rely on what your training's able to guide you.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Making a Runner. Today's episode is a part two of my conversation from a few weeks back with Dr. Jordan Leppin, where you'll remember that we spoke about quite in depth about the balancing act of endurance training. I'm not going to go over the previous conversation in any way, shape or form here. I do touch base on it at the start of this chat with Jordan. But if you haven't listened to it, I highly recommend you going back a couple of weeks and finding that conversation. It was really a fantastic one. We chatted into so many details, and this is purely just a continuation. Where in the previous conversation, we touched on all things related to cardiac system, pulmonary system, immune system. Today's conversation is purely just about hormones. Hormones play such a crucial and fundamental role in our daily life, and training has a huge effect on those. So we get quite deep into hormones. We chat about how diet and training affects our hormones and give you some tips how to make sure that you are staying on top of your hormonal health as an individual. We also touch on the effects of mental health, how it is tied in very close to injury and hormonal health, and hopefully through today's conversation, we can give you a little bit of extra insight as to how to make the most of your training and get you understanding the limits of endurance training. But that's enough from me. I'll leave it to the conversation. I hope that you guys enjoy it. And as always, feel free to leave us a review or comment on the streaming platform that you're listening from, or follow us on social media at Making a Runner. But that's enough from me. I hope that you enjoy my conversation with Dr. Jordan Leppin. Jordy, thank you so much for being on the show again. This is a part two of our previous conversation. I'm excited to get stuck in.
Pleasure, Nick. Yeah, great to be back on again.
So if you're someone that hasn't listened to the part one of our balancing act with running, I strongly recommend going back there. I mean, we do talk quite a lot about cardiovascular health, respiratory health, what to do when you get sick and how to not get sick, or how to look after and boost your immunity. So that is definitely something that is at the forefront of what I deal with personally a lot with runners, and a lot of questions that I get from fellow runners, and I'm sure you get that too. But not to go over the same elements that we've spoken about previously, if there's a couple of touch points that we can bring on from the previous conversation that will sort of lead nicely into our conversation that we'll chat about today. It's sort of the principle of overtraining. So I want to just start there. Perhaps we can reiterate how can one define what overtraining feels like for them individually, and what are some sort of practical tips for runners to not overtrain?
Yeah, and these are great topics, Nick. That's a lot of our kind of serious amateur athletes are experiencing. And overtraining ultimately is when we're overloading our body with stresses and training volumes that our body just cannot keep up to regenerating and recovering from. And there's a variety of symptoms that we can be on the lookout for. Often it's sleep disturbances. We're just not able to get to sleep as easily. We're not waking up feeling rejuvenated, feeling fatigued in the day, during workouts. We're not able to keep up to kind of training
parameters. Like, we're not hitting the sessions that we used to, should be, or yeah, that used to be able
used to be able to do. Feeling frustrated, listless very easily.
So training harder is not the answer here.
No, it's about training smarter. and yeah, it's just
it's also like chronic injuries, picking up niggles that you know where your boundaries are, and if you're constantly picking up the same niggle, it's often a sign that you are perhaps overdoing it. So yeah, again, being smart about it, pulling it back. Is there anything else from an overtraining perspective?
A lot of infections. So if you get repetitive kind of infections.
So if you're constantly getting sick.
Yeah.
Okay.
Things like that. And decreased libido, sexual function, things like that.
So those are all signs and symptoms. Because I want to ask that because it is something that is individual, right? Everyone's going to react differently to different volumes of training. Yeah. What you can handle physically might break me completely. And it's not even as simple as looking at it as mileage. You know, it's take the two of us, for example, give us 100 kilometer running week. And the way I handle that versus the way you handle it is completely different. And even you can look deeper at that and now have someone that's doing 100 kilometers of quality work versus someone that's doing 100 kilometers of just easy work. The way their body handles that is different. So you're never comparing apples with apples when you're looking at different runners. Is that true?
Exactly right. Yeah, we all process kind of training in different ways because we've all got different running techniques. We're putting on strain on different parts of our
different
bodies.
Different history of running.
Exactly. We've got different ways of metabolizing food and energy. So we've got different ways of recovering. Mm. And one of the big issues of overtraining is we cause hormonal disturbances.
Yeah.
And that's often paired with eating kind of issues and just not keeping up our nutrition, which ultimately then leads to bone problems and stress fractures and things like that.
And that's a great intro, I think, to what I would really want the focus of today's conversation to be around, and hormone health for running. I think, you know, first of all, it's something that it's very misunderstood. Like, we all know the basic hormones, you know, your sex hormones, your testosterone, your estrogens, all of those. And we'll get deeper into them today. But I think it's something that we don't really understand. We don't understand how they are created in our body, what the functions that they have, how they affect our training, how they affect our ability to perform, recover. So I want to just start off with perhaps what is a hormone? And then moving on to how our hormones affected by us training.
Yeah, it's great questions, Nick. And I think the more people can understand that we are effectively hormone puppets as humans, our lives are being played out by a myriad of hormones that are having effects on a variety of our cells. So it's a type of chemical that's creating different kind of cellular kind of changes. So as you mentioned, there's a whole bunch of hormones, and they generally fat-based chemicals that produce effects in a variety of organ systems. And so,
and is that why, like, that's important to mention, and the fact that you'll find that a lot of, like, the aesthetic behind athletics and running in general, a lot of people get into running for weight loss. You know, you're looking to drop weight to run faster. There's that mentality around it. And you're mentioning the fact that we need fat in order for hormones to thrive in our body. But we oftentimes are looking to try to get ourselves into a situation where we are avoiding fat and we're trying to decrease our body fat. And that's obviously a big issue for athletes.
Exactly right. You hit the nail on the head, Nick. So hormones get made from fat stores. So that relies on us as athletes having a store of fat to be able to make those hormones from. So as soon as we start decreasing our fat reserves, we start affecting the amount of hormones that can be created. So it often starts with nutritional issues where we're just not able to keep up our
demand
of a well-balanced diet. So we don't have the, we're not supplying our body actually with the fats to actually create these hormones. And then once our body is not able to create these hormones, then the rest of our body system starts shutting down.
But it's a difficult line. And again, I guess it relates to the balancing act that we're trying to chat about. Yeah, it's a difficult line between someone getting into running because they want to now drop a little bit of weight, and there's a certain amount of healthy weight loss that does naturally happen with running, and obsessing about weight loss and doing running because I want to lose weight. That's probably not the right reasoning to be running.
Exactly right. I mean, running is probably not your best way of actually weight loss. there's definitely better ways to do that. So if you're going to lose weight, you probably are going to be struggling to achieve that goal. Although, I mean, it certainly
you probably
can
have
be
a
done,
lot of weight to lose. If you're someone that has a lot of weight to lose, but it's funny because you did mention it off air. It's like, it's often the people that, you know, are getting into running for weight loss that are sort of the prime candidates for the issues and injuries that do end up happening because of their body not being in a conditioned state to run.
Yeah, exactly right. And that's termed the exercise paradox, is that those that are most likely to benefit from exercise, they also, those that are most likely to actually suffer complications from the exercise. As we mentioned before, is that exercise is medicine, and that it can cause issues. So it takes a while. If you're new to sport and new to running and to exercise, you really got to let your body adapt. And often walking is probably the best way to lose weight compared to running. Because you keep your heart rate at a lower rate, which ultimately allows you to stay in a fat-burning zone. As soon as your heart rate goes kind of beyond 150, 160, obviously depending on age and condition, your body generally doesn't use fat as
primary source of fuel.
Exactly. So you're kind of then moving into your glycogen and carbohydrate breakdowns. Mm. So if you're wanting to lose fat, actually the best way is to keep your heart rate low. If you can do that while running, that's great. But often if you're new to the sport, your heart rate can go really high. So you're actually not going to be staying in that fat-burning zone for very long. So,
And correct me if I'm wrong, but is it true to say that people need to look at this as, rather than a switch, like a light switch that's on and off, more like a dimmer switch where it's, you know, at a certain intensity, you're using maybe 98% fat and 2% glycogen, and then as that intensity shifts up, you are sort of dimming that switch more towards the glycogen stores and utilizing that as a primary source of fuel.
Yeah, you're 100% right, Nick. We effectively hybrid cars. We're using multiple sources of fuel depending on our heart rate and what our body can use. So there's a lot of adaptation that can take place in our bodies if we give it certain fuels to use. So one of them is that we can kind of stay in a fat burning zone at a higher heart rate if we learn to train with higher fat kind of intake. And it takes time for that to occur, but it's definitely possible. But effectively, when we're living our days, when we're running, we're using a variety of
energy sources. Exactly. And now to shift it back to hormones. We've obviously talked about the importance of fats and understanding the importance of a higher body fat percentage, and it does start to get risky. Is there a difference between male and female? Obviously, you know, there's often, and this is things that I've heard throughout the health industry and being involved in the health industry, you know, for a man to have low body fat percentage naturally, like that's more normal. If a female starts to drop into a low body fat percentage, that's a lot more risky to their health. But there's also an element of, you know, males can also struggle with the similar issues that females struggle with when they are at a low body fat percentage.
Yeah, exactly right. I mean, initially, when hormonal dysfunction in overtraining was kind of starting to be talked about, the female athletes were the ones that were kind of focused on. And initially, it was termed the female triad, which was when a lady became amenorrheic. So when they stopped menstruating because their hormone levels, their estrogen, got so low. And then that was then associated with kind of osteoporosis, decreased bone density, as well as then with decreased eating and reduced energy intake. So that was termed the triad, but that term has kind of now fallen out of favor because we've kind of realized that men as well are getting affected by these same issues. So the term now is REDS, which is relative energy deficiency syndrome. And that kind of broadly takes kind of caters for male and females, because what we're realizing is men are going through the same issues. But obviously we, as males, we don't have periods to guide ourselves on how bad
our hormonal
dysfunction may be. So we don't almost get the warning signs before the stress fractures happen.
Yeah.
Whereas ladies will often get the warning signs of amenorrhea for weeks or months before a stress fracture kind of comes along.
But now tell me, what do hormones do for endurance performance? Is there a link between performance and hormones, or is that also a bit blurred?
It's not so clear cut, especially when it comes to sex hormones themselves. They ultimately keep our body healthy, and they regulate our muscles and our bones to allow us to stay healthy and perform. They're not really performance enhancing as such. I mean, obviously, when it comes to steroids and things like that, they can have an effect, because then they effectively bolster your kind of muscular system beyond normal ranges. So if you kind of had to take those anabolic kind of hormones, that may have those effects, but they all have negative effects as well, because if you give an external source of testosterone, you're effectively dimming down your body's own response to produce testosterone. So you effectively then kind of run the risk of many things, infertility and things like that, because your body then is not producing
its own source,
as well as downstream kind of hormones that are needed for optimal functioning. So sure, you might get a little bit of a performance gain, but you only get a huge negative side effects as well. And in a sport like running, especially long distance, you're not going to get the great benefits from having necessarily a stronger muscular system. In more kind of shorter distance sports,
that power
then
sports,
you might be able to get that. But that's why it's never really run the, you don't often hear too many people on overdosing on testosterone in the endurance world.
Yeah. And I mean, how does that then affect ladies that say are on the pill or are taking artificial or synthetic forms of these hormones? Is there a link between that and then them being affected later on in life from that perspective as well?
Yeah, it's a good question, Nick, and we don't have the complete evidence for it. A lot of ladies think that you can just take the hormones and effectively they could be doing the job of what your body's doing by producing them. But they just don't have as kind of an overall body effect that your natural kind of hormones will be doing. So, you know, it's
difficult to pinpoint it to something there.
Exactly.
And in terms of like having lower hormone levels, like I know you mentioned, obviously it's easier with ladies to pick it up than males, but what are sort of signs and symptoms of someone that is struggling with their hormone levels? Is there such a thing as signs that they can pick up earlier on?
Yeah, there certainly
before
are.
Before getting a stress fracture.
Yeah, there certainly are. As mentioned with the overtraining ones, they're often synonymous, kind of, they're very similar type of symptoms. So they again will be your fatigue, your sleep difficulties, irritability, unable to kind of keep up with usual training volumes, decreased sexual functioning, libido, things like that. Hair loss can come along with it.
But
dry skin, kind of.
So there's a whole wide array. But correct me if I'm wrong, but isn't training supposed to be enhancing our body's way of dealing with these things? So surely if I'm now someone that trains and trains in a healthy way, like our testosterone levels should be boosted by that, shouldn't they? They shouldn't be affected negatively by it. Or am I wrong in thinking that?
You'd think so, but most of the time running, particularly endurance sport, is actually quite a catabolic activity. It actually breaks down that. And the cortisol that gets released under these kind of stressful endurance activities has a negative effect on the production of testosterone and muscle building anabolic kind of hormones. So they often talk about strength training. That has got one of the benefits is that you effectively using more muscle. So you're going to be activating more kind of testosterone output. Whereas running itself, you're actually breaking down a lot of muscle tissue most of the time. So you're actually decreasing that drive for testosterone production.
So strength training would be one of the ways to sort of negate the testosterone breakdown and improve your body's inherent ability of developing testosterone.
Exactly right. Yeah. An interesting journey to follow as well. I've followed is Ryan Hall, who is the great American marathoner. Yeah. And he
lifts heavy.
Yeah, he lifts heavy now. And he's really metamorphosized himself. And it's quite special to see an athlete who's been able to change his career. And he effectively, he was a really thin marathoner. And he talks quite freely about the difficulties he had with really low testosterone in his running career, and how he constantly kind of felt fatigued and listless for a lot of the time. And that was kind of, at that stage, he was needing that kind of physique to achieve the goals he was after. But then since stepping away from the elite running, he's kind of moved into the more strength training, and he's been able to completely change. He looks unrecognizable.
He looks completely different. He looks like a strong individual now. It looks like strength training is first and then running.
Yeah.
After, he's like a hybrid athlete.
Exactly. And naturally, his testosterone has just skyrocketed. And it just shows you that given a period of time, your body will completely be able to recover from these overtraining hormonal difficulties that it runs into. You just need to give it those periods of rest and recovery that's needed. And ideally, you just always want to try and catch yourself before you ever get to a period where you have to completely take a break from running and deload.
But now, bone health, I want to talk a little bit about that and the correlation between the hormonal issues and bone health. Obviously, we speak about stress fractures, and that those are very common in runners. I mean, most runners listening to this will know someone or will have developed a stress fracture. I mean, we were talking about some high profiles. I mean, your Ryan Sands, your Yvette Van Zyls. I mean, people that we've had on the podcast before, we've chatted to. I mean, it's almost seen as, and this is the old school mentality of it, like if you haven't had a stress fracture in your running career, you haven't trained hard enough, or you haven't pushed yourself to that boundary. I mean, how is that correlated in terms of bone health and hormone health? And then make me understand why our bones are more susceptible, because as far as I understood, the running load is a good thing for our bones. It builds our bone strength, shouldn't it?
Yeah, it should. And I'd love to kind of paint that picture a little bit clearer and give you a little bit of the practical things that's happening in the bone. Is that ultimately when our hormones start decreasing, you get two types of bone cells that effectively start changing. One of them is called the osteoclast, and the other one is the osteoblast. The osteoblast builds bone, and that gets stimulated by hormones, so your estrogen, your testosterone. The other one is the osteoclast, and the clast breaks down bone cells. And those start living longer when you don't have those hormones around anymore.
Okay.
So effectively, when your hormones start decreasing, those osteoclasts start living longer and the osteoblasts don't kind of start regenerating. So effectively, you start resorbing your bone. So your bones start effectively becoming more brittle and osteoporotic. So even though you're training and you're putting mechanical load on that bone, the bone itself from the inside,
the tissue of the bone,
is actually starting to decrease its density, which then is effectively just becoming more brittle and more prone to a fracture. So starting from your feet to your tibia, to your pelvis, kind of these are the three really common areas that runners will get stress fractures.
That's so interesting. I really like how you've painted that picture for me, because in my head, I'm just thinking it's a physical load that I'm putting on that body. And as I'm putting that load, that's my bone is happy for that load. But now if on a physiological level, that bone is becoming weaker, I can see how that load is actually going to start to become a problem. And I think it then relates to what we're talking about. You know, you having your side effects that are now in line with decreased performance, you know, decreased mood, all these things that are now psychologically starting to psych you out And what do you do as an athlete is you generally try and train harder. So you train harder, you push yourself more, you push yourself harder on the workouts, you start to push more volume, and then you end up hurting yourself and you're surprised at that point. So it's kind of like a vicious circle that you get yourself into. How does one break out of it? I mean, we've talked about recognizing these symptoms early, but what can we actually do to get our hormone health right, to get ourselves in a better position as athletes, other than, you know, what we've spoken about, taking time off? But what are other elements that runners can do?
I think the biggest one is just starting eating like in a much more comprehensive way.
So fueling yourself properly.
In a really well-balanced way, making sure you get your fats in. Fats, unfortunately, have got the rap over the years of just being very caloric, very high in calories, and you're kind of going to increase your weight and then your performance is going to decrease because you're heavier. But you have to just kind of think, as these are your building blocks for these hormones that are ultimately keeping your whole body happy.
Mm.
And really, if you're training kind of well, you're not going to be picking up huge volumes, and that's not going to be impairing your performance at all. It truly will be improving your performance.
So it's really about trying to fix yourself from within. I mean, is there a position for supplementation where it can help? Like, there's those bone supplements, and there's people that take therapeutic forms of testosterone, and I mean, obviously, it seems like the best way is to deal with the things that you can physically deal with, like your nutrition, like your rest, like your deload off of your training. But is there more that runners can do?
Not really, Nick. I think you've touched all of those points really well, is that effectively you just naturally got to let it do its job. You've got to make sure hormones are the fat derivative. So you've got to get those fats in. So no matter how many times you're taking bone supplements or collagen or whatever, yeah, that is not going to effectively turn into bone unless you've got the hormones that are stimulating bone production. So there's no shortcuts to it.
There's no easy way out.
No. You've got to have a well-rounded meals, and that means you've got to be...
I was hoping for like a quick release of the symptoms early on.
No. So that means you're going to have to be efficient in the kitchen. So either you or your family or partners are going to have to make sure that that you're eating, and it's going to need that kind of consistent diet. And
yeah,
it's not going to be one or two meals a week of a comprehensive diet plan that's going to get you back up. But you need to really constantly
build those stores up from the ground.
Yeah.
Up. Now, Jordy, where do the hormones come from? Like, what? Where are they signaled from? Like, is it our pituitary gland? Is it our adrenals? Is it both? And how does overtraining, like, and say like something like adrenal fatigue and those things that you hear runners struggling with, like, am I talking the right thing here?
Yeah, relate to each other. You're right. You're talking the right words indeed. So it all does start in our brains. It starts in our hypothalamus and our pituitary. So they're small little organs in the kind of center area of our brains. And they start releasing a variety of hormones. And then they have downstream effects where they start releasing hormones either in our adrenal glands or our gonads, so either our testicles or our ovaries. And ultimately our ovaries, for the ladies, are producing the estrogen. For the males, it's the testicles where our testosterone is hugely produced. And so it ultimately starts
in the brain.
So they talk about the hypothalamus pituitary adrenal axis, the HPA.
Okay.
And so those are where the main ones are kind of made.
The ones that we're talking about in today's conversation. And how important is the gut in this? Because, I mean, I know with Leah and her issues, and we've spoken about them before on the podcast, like, the gut was a big element of her hormonal issues as well. Where does that come into this picture?
I think the gut is being opened up more and more in the last few years about how important it is to optimal functioning and performance, because ultimately our foods are getting absorbed through the gut. So if you're not absorbing things well, your body won't be able to produce anything really. Yeah. And what we're also finding is that the gut is producing a huge amount of hormones itself that are having effects on our body. So really making sure our gut is healthy is key. And our gut health is going to be changing from day to day. We've got a zoo of microbacteria inside our gut that we need to keep healthy. I often like to think that we have to keep our zoo happy. We've got to keep our bacteria in our gut healthy. And that often feeds, it comes down to feeding them with the things that they need. So I often like to think of, like, people think of lettuce has got no effective calories, it's got nothing. But what it does do is that it feeds our bacteria in our gut, and then our bacteria feed us. They produce short chain fatty acids and medium chain fatty acids, and that is a wonderful source of fatty acids for our body to either fuel on or make things. And you can't really quantify what our bacteria are making for us. It's part of the nutritional equation that isn't really ever brought in. We just talk about what we're putting in our mouths, but we're forgetting that our bacteria are actually producing energy for us to use as well.
Yeah, the gut is such an interesting area of our body. It's something that, you know, I've recently tried to research and learn a lot more about. It was something silly that I read somewhere. It's like if you had to lay all of our inner gut surfaces out, it would like take up an entire tennis court. And that's like the size of the surface area that our little gut is basically dealing with. And it's so interesting how it's like it's within us, but it's a completely separate system to the inner workings of our body. It's still outside of us the entire time, like from start to finish. It's just amazing how the body functions and how the gut is at the center of it. And that's, I guess, where the nutritional element that you're talking about becomes so important.
Exactly right.
Now, with the gut in mind, and obviously we've spoken of nutrition, we've spoken about the hormonal effects. Now, I want to sort of go more into the emotional and the psychological elements of the issues that we're talking about, because we know that the problem with chronic injuries, and unfortunately with running, because we're so fanatic about running and we love the sport and we love always looking for progress and looking at the data and reading all these things. Now, for someone to actually take a step back and look after their health, as to what you're suggesting we do, you know, take the time away, decrease our training load, change the way that we eat, all of those wonderful things, it comes with quite a lot of mental and emotional pressures that a lot of runners struggle with. And not just runners, I mean athletes in general, but for today's conversation, runners. What would you say to that?
Yeah, I'll talk about how we identify with our running and with our sport. And we've got to realize that it's long-term goals that we're after with our exercise ultimately. It's to live long, healthy lives. And it's not necessarily always about the PBs or the immediate gains in the weeks to come. Because I think sometimes we identify too much about just the achievements about the running rather than the actual health-producing outcomes that it's giving us. And often we come to realize how we identify with our running and with our sport is when we get injured. And that's the only time we kind of then get shaken to the core and we think, shit, we've lost what we identify as. This is who we are. And that can kind of be quite a shaking of our foundations. And just never letting it become more than what it is ultimately meant to be, which is just to make us healthier, happier humans, and not necessarily, the very few of us that are making a living from running.
Yeah, that's so not what we do it for.
It doesn't matter if you don't get that PB, don't be too tough on yourself. You're out there, and you're healthier for it.
But there's such an addictive element to running and the sport of running. And for a lot of people that I know, you know, a lot. Oftentimes, they do come from an addiction background, or from a broken home, or from an abused background, and they sort of find their fortitude within running. And when that gets taken away, that's when it becomes a pretty slippery slope mentally for a lot of people. And there's then, you know, there's the suicidal thoughts, and it can be very difficult for an athlete. They can feel very alone when the one thing that they enjoy doing is taken away from them.
Yeah, it's a really important point you raise about mental health, Nick. And there have been a few notable athletes over the last few years that have unfortunately committed suicide because they've either had kind of career-altering health conditions, or they were not being able to run. And just we have to identify somewhere that we're on that spectrum. Mm. We might not identify it so heavily that if we can't run, that it would be a life-threatening kind of...
Yeah, I mean, there was recently that story of Emilia Brangelfock that she was a trail runner, ultra trail runner, who had competed at World Champs and did well for Sweden. And she was told that she had an abnormal heart rate for her training and she needed to take some time away, and she couldn't fathom that, and she ended up committing suicide. And I mean, these are the stories that are making, you know, news, but there's many other stories out there that don't get this type of light shed on them. And you know, it's about understanding that there needs to be more to running than just, like you say, the immediate self, you know, because the moment it is just about yourself or your achievements, it can feel very dark when those get taken away from you. If you are able to look at it in a different light or enjoy it from a different element or see it from a different point of view or live it through someone else's journey, have something bigger in terms of your purpose, that's often a good way of trying to look at it or reframe a negative situation.
Exactly right. Yeah, it was really sad to hear about Amelia's passing at the end of last year. Just a really talented runner. And as you say, that's the tip of the iceberg for every person that's ultimately finding themselves in such a difficult situation that they're contemplating taking their life. There's many others that are losing the stability and the homeostasis in their own lives. They're losing social circles, relationships, jobs along the way. If they've been unable to process running and injuries in a healthy manner during their kind of training time. And I think just realizing that we're somewhere on that spectrum of how we identify with our running is really important. And then just being able to regularly take breaks away from our running programs and to challenge ourselves with what are we going to do with our time now?
Yeah. I'm sure it's something that already brings people to anxiety, just thinking about the action of doing that.
Yeah.
But I mean, how does someone, and is there a link to hormonal health and those sort of thoughts, those suicidal thoughts and the way that we think about ourselves and our running journey? Is there a link there, or is it just something that goes in hand, because generally if you have poor hormone health, you're going to have poor general health and that will lead to injury and it's a slippery slope from then on?
Yeah, I think so, Nick. I'm not too sure of the exact link between hormonal health and kind of mental health, but as soon as we have a decreased hormonal health, then generally a lot of our body takes strain.
And what is happening to our body after a run? Like after post-run, we get this runner's high, and we all know of the runner's high. It's addictive, and it's why we love running. And if you haven't experienced the runner's high, then you're probably not doing running correctly. But what is happening there? Is that a hormonal response, or is that like just what is happening?
Yeah, so that's it's not quite hormonal. It's more kind of neurochemical. Yeah. So that's the endorphins, which are, I mean, they're different types of chemical messengers, just as a hormone kind of is, but it's just a different effective molecule, not as fat-based as a hormone is. And that's just releasing a variety of chemicals that we then associate with happiness and kind of joy and
feelings of euphoria.
Yeah, and one of the hormones that does get released is dopamine and things like that.
And that just happens from the action of going out and having an enjoyable run.
Yeah. And it's usually towards the end of it, there's a goal that's been achieved.
Yeah.
And dopamine is part of the reward pathway in our brains. And we just we just get that elation and that euphoria that, that
of having lost. Achieved something.
Yeah, and then often the downside is after the run, we have the days after, it's the blues. The,
yes.
When those hormones and those neurochemicals start to decrease. And
that's what's also happening when you're not running because you're injured.
Exactly. And so then you end up trying to find your fix in some other way. And so there's no gentle way to say that exercise is a type of drug.
Yeah.
It's just that it's a healthy drug 99.9% of the time. And we're so thankful for it. a lot of the world would be a lot crazier if we didn't have it.
Yeah.
But we've just got to realize that at times it can be a little bit dangerous in terms of how we let it affect our lives.
So it does come down, again, like we say, to moderation, like with any other things that we do in our lives. But now say with, we're talking about the blues, and something that I think a lot of runners struggle with is also after a goal. Like you've trained for 6 months, or some people have trained for years towards achieving a certain goal. And you know what? You've achieved your goal. You actually did what you wanted to do. You set out for that sub-3-hour marathon at the start of your running journey, and now you've done it. Yeah. Like, I think once it happens, people can hit a pretty low after that, because it just feels like, okay, well, what's next? I've done what I wanted to do with my running. Like, what would you say to that?
Yeah, I'd say it's a massive element, and it's certainly not one only isolated to runners or sportsmen. Johnny Wilkinson talks famously about how low he felt after winning the World Cup in 2003. The goal was achieved. What next is there to kind of do?
What could you want?
Yeah, and it's a challenge of how you then process how you're going to move forward. And it's, again, it's why do you do something is ultimately more important than what you're actually doing.
Mm.
I always like to talk about the why, the what, the how, and the when. And often it's the why that is way more important than what you actually you're doing. And if you've set your goal for running, is the why is for the health benefits, for the enjoyment of the social activities, for the runner's high, then you know what? You're always going to be enjoying it. But if you've only set it for
performance based,
you're going to be stuck on this treadmill, effectively only searching for improvements every single run, and you're effectively chasing the rainbow, the pot at the end of the rainbow.
Because then
it's dangerous.
It's dangerous, and also it's something that, you know, you can't expect from your body. You can't expect your body to constantly just improve. I mean, aging is a factor.
Yeah.
How much of a factor is aging in our body and hormones as well? I mean, I'm sure it plays a big role in hormone production and the down regulation of hormones. So maybe we can chat a little bit about more the aging athlete and how they can manage their own body's ability and expectation going forward in their career.
Yeah, it's something that's so, I mean, as humans, we think we'll always be able to attain the things that we once did. From our peaks or whatever. But as our bodies get older, we're just not able to produce the same amount of hormones, the same amount of neurochemicals. Our muscle mass starts to decrease as we get older. And we're just simply not able to achieve, to give our bodies the building blocks to achieve the kind of gains that we once might have had. And then it's just about shifting your goalposts, about saying, you know what, I did once run a sub-3, but now, hey, I'm 60.
Happy.
And you know what? A 4:20 could be great.
Yeah.
And
just finishing a marathon.
And just being, just finishing it. And being happy with that and saying, you know what? You're still running. Just being there is a success in and of itself. And some runners do struggle with that. As soon as they can't have the performance outcomes, then they stop it completely.
But I guess it then comes down to the why and figuring that out when you do set out on your running journey, and oftentimes having a why that's related more to an overall sense of being or sense of purpose is going to be a better why in terms of your longevity in a sport than a performance-based, because we know performance is always going to be limited. You are always going to get to a stage in your running career where you will look back and be like, ah, I remember when I used to do that. And you're going to sort of have to be able to dissociate your current self from what you used to be able to achieve. And there's nothing wrong with that. Like, that is a factor in life in general. But I think it's evident for those guys that have been running for 20, 30, 40 years. It's something that they have had to come to terms with one way or another. I think with this new sort of influx of people into the sport, you know, whether you're starting the sport at 50, at 60, at 40, like, you can expect to see improvements in the short term. Like, yes, that's just what happens. Your body will improve. But eventually time catches up, your body catches up, injuries, all of that will catch up. You just have to be mindful of it.
Exactly. Yeah. Early on in a sport, you'll be ticking off PBs quite quickly because you're new to it.
There's always progress.
Yeah. But at some point, you just got to realize, you just got to enjoy the plateau effect and not always looking for the next PB. You just got to realize that keeping up your performance is great.
It's just good. It's as good
that,
as it gets.
And that is as great as you can, because that means you're still allowing your body great recovery, you're still doing well, and that consistency to then keep up at your peak is really something
very special. That's also where, you know, looking after your body when you are young, when you are starting out, building it up slowly over time, looking after your hormones when you are in your 20s and 30s, that surely then is going to pay interest when you are later in your career as an athlete in your 40s, 50s, and 60s. Is that so?
Exactly. Yeah, you've built up that base. And often as endurance runners, you kind of reach your peak towards your late 30s, possibly 40s.
Yeah.
So you've actually just got to stay in the game
and
long
stay
enough
consistent,
so that when you get to that point, that then you're ready to actually produce the outcomes. You don't want to break yourself too early, that then you don't kind of get to that point, or you've had enough of it, or you've had too many setbacks. So you kind of just got to stay consistent enough for a long enough period that when the time comes, that then you're ready to perform
and hit it.
Yeah.
And with hormone health, just to sort of bring it back, is it something that, you know, as an older athlete, you're more likely to struggle with, or is it something that younger athletes should really be worried and careful with? Or is it kind of something that regardless of your age, you got to be aware of and you're likely to have issues if you overtrain?
It's usually as we kind of get older, we don't have as much of a hormonal issue. Two reasons. One is that we're generally not kind of pushing our bodies as hard as we were when maybe we were younger. Life has got kind of other responsibilities. We're just not training as hard. And two is that our body starts laying down more fat stores as we get older. So we're generally not kind of running into an
as
era.
Susceptible to
yeah.
it.
Yeah. So it's usually kind of earlier in our kind of running careers. But I mean,
yeah. So would you put it down as it's if you're looking after those fat stores, if you are being very careful with that, that's one way of staying on top of it and making sure that your body will be able to produce its hormones pretty well.
Exactly. I mean, ultimately, I think that's exact
what it comes down to.
And looking after your fat stores, ultimately, the practical thing means looking after your diet, making sure that you're eating a comprehensive diet, and ultimately not being too concerned of what the scale is saying. It's ultimately what your training is able to say. And if you're able to train well and slowly make these gradual changes, add your loads, then you know what? You're doing well.
Yeah, you're doing better than most.
Yeah, so don't rely on what the scale's saying to you. Rely on what your training's able to guide you.
Brilliant. And in terms of practical advice for people that do suffer from bone health issues, osteoporosis, even, you know, osteoarthritis, which is completely different, but we can maybe touch on that a little bit. And people that have had stress fractures or maybe are getting recurring stress fractures, what can they do other than what we've already spoken about from a hormonal perspective? Is there more that can be done to look after that bone health?
So if things start becoming recurring issues, really seeking the health of some kind of professional guidance, so either endocrinologists as well as then kind of nutritionists or dietitians, really just that support and making sure that they're monitoring your kind of intake, your weight gains is key. I think trying to get yourself back onto a healthy platform by yourself is quite hard. And often, if you've kind of run into these issues, these overtraining issues and osteoporosis and kind of decreased bone density, you're really going to need the help of health professionals just to kind of get you back on track.
Yeah, well, we mentioned it in our previous podcast about how it's so important to build that support structure around you and have people that can guide you through these difficult times. And I'm sure that it has a big effect on your mental and emotional side when the issues do come around.
Exactly. Exactly right. And I mean, we're living in a golden age of information and technology, and the right information is out there. It's just about finding it. So if you have got some friends and buddies and some people who can guide you in the right places, either through clubs or whatever, then you might be able to get through with enough information to kind of get yourself back on the mend. But often just the best way is just through a health professional, just to be able to give you those margins and those kind of progress reports that you're going to need.
Fantastic, man. I think it's just important to mention that, you know, if you are someone that is struggling both mentally, physically with your issues or your injuries, or you are feeling like your running is very much in the stuck place and it's not getting there, you're not alone. You know, there are many other runners and people out there that do struggle with these thoughts and feelings and issues. And it's important to voice your concerns. I personally believe that it's important to have someone that you can speak to about these issues, because oftentimes just talking about them is the best way to be able to internalize them and deal with the issues and figuring out a way forward. But also just knowing that it is a totally normal thing. I mean, everybody goes through it, and we are all there at the end of the day in the sport because we love it. And if we don't have someone to turn to that's going to help us and hold our hand through these difficult times, then I also feel that we're not building the right community around us with the sport. So it's important to encourage that for fellow runners and people out there.
Exactly right, Nick. We've all gone through a spectrum of overtraining, whether it's been the acute stress fractures or just feeling fatigued and unable to reach the gains we once had and the goals. And being able to just talk with others and find out what their journeys and how they recovered has been. It's probably,
and people are generally so willing to talk about it.
They're so willing to open up.
To open to them.
Yeah. And the amount of tips and info you'll be able to pick up from others is huge. Again, there's no need to reinvent this wheel. It's
people really have been through it.
Yeah, it's a really well known. It's not a mystical topic anymore.
Yeah.
So we know how to go about treating it and managing it. It's just about kind of getting that information and then following through and just being patient to see that recovery. Yeah. You need the patience to see improvement, like to see ultimate goals, but you also need to see patience to see recovery. So
brilliant, Jordy. Thank you, man. It's been a great two-part podcast. I think we've really nailed the finding the balance between in our training. And I know we haven't perhaps reiterated it enough, or maybe we have, but it is a constant juggling act of how much training is too much and how much is not enough. Because if we don't train hard enough, we don't get the improvements that we want. But if we train too hard, then the boundaries eventually do push back. And we all know a runner that has had one too many boundaries push back too many times. So I think it is a fine line, but as long as you go into it willing to learn from the experience constantly, and know that no training session should ever look the same or feel the same, and no training session is ever going to have the same outcome, you're doing a pretty good job.
Exactly right. Yeah, every day is a different day. When you wake up, you just don't know what your body has in terms of the energy to give you, and
take it as it comes.
Yeah, and just enjoying the ride and not setting yourself at any one particular goal at while we run. Yeah. Set yourself a variety
don't set
of reasons.
Yourself up for failure.
Yeah.
People set themselves up for failure all the time.
Yeah.
So just be realistic in your goals. Have someone that's going to help you get to those goals. find the guidance, whether it's a training partner, someone that you confide in, a coach, whatever it is. Have that person, listen to them, let them guide you in your training, and then just have a bigger picture to your small everyday step-by-step process.
Exactly right.
Brilliant. Thank you, Jordy. Thank you so much. I wish you all the best with the rest of your training and your ultra marathon coming up. And I hope that it goes a little bit better than the last marathon that you've run.
Thanks very much, man.
I have to ask you quickly, what was easier, the 42 or the 250K? Because I think then we'll find out a little bit more about what happened in Greece to our first time marathoner.
Yeah.
Phidippides. Phidippides. I keep on reading it incorrectly, man.
Yes, I love the 250. I get stronger the longer I go.
So he probably passed away because of the 42, not the 250, is what you're saying.
Probably try to get there too fast.
Brilliant. Thanks, Jordy, man. Yeah. Thank you for listening to another episode of Making a Runner. We hope you enjoyed it and found value in the show. Don't forget to rate and leave a review on your favorite streaming platform. And remember to share with your running buddies.
Follow our journey on our socials and feel free to engage with us on all things running. We wish you a pleasant run, wherever the road or trail may take you. Bye for now.